Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We are tonight's entertainment.
You are part of the Rebel Alliance and a traitor.
Yes, indeed. We are, in fact, this afternoon's entertainment. Thank you, Joker. Welcome to another edition of Hamp Radio, this week in MMA edition. Today we're going to have, as Tony has dubbed it, the all-Canadian edition of this week in MMA. So for all you American fans, try and hang on. It's okay, we have accents. Today we are coming at you from the mean street of Brampton, Ontario. Cold, but very sunny, so we all appreciating that. As I said, I'm lucky to be joined by two great Canadians, both of which I have met in person, both excellent dudes. Let's bring in first Mr. James Lynch, at Lynch on Sports. You can follow him on Twitter. And of course, if you don't know, he is of the Parting Shot one-on-one fame. These have been coming out with some serious regularity lately. So let's go ahead and bring him in, Mr. James Lynch.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. Can't think of a better way to spend my Sunday. This is great.
Well, we thank you very much for your time. But before we get into it, James, the most important question I have for you is, did you get into an NBA Jam playoff session on Friday, as we were discussing on Twitter?
Oh, you better believe it, man. Classic gaming's my thing, and came home. I got like an Android box that has all my old games on it, and I played some NBA Jam. John Stockton, Karl Malone, Utah Jazz. That's my team. I was thinking those threes, and it was great. I love that game, and I love the classic games because, you know, you can just pick them up and play them, and they're not too complicated. So definitely got my jam in on Friday.
Nice, and just to pull the curtain back for everybody listening, I dug out my old Sega Genesis the other day, and I was playing some old school games, and I was sending pictures to James online and on Twitter, and because I know James is a big video game freak like me, so we had a little bit of fun back and forth playing some old video games, and I digress. Let's bring on our second host of the day, and unfortunately I don't have any drops for either of these gentlemen, so that's why there are no drops. Coming at us live from the mean streets of Tillsonburg, Ontario, we have Josh from Tillsonburg, and he can be followed on Twitter at 44GSP44. Now, how are you today, Josh?
Excellent, guys. Happy to be here. Happy to join James and yourself on this Sunday afternoon to talk some fights.
Yeah, and as I was saying, we were talking off air before we got on the show, and everybody on this phone call is enjoying the sun today. We're not going to go too much outside, but we're all enjoying the fact that the sun is out. But Josh, the most important question is, how did your son's hockey game go, and did we get the W?
Yeah, definitely. Well, first of all, he's only five, so he's just 5 and 6 year old, but it's hilarious to watch, and he enjoys sports, man. Like I have two sons, and my oldest son, he lives for hockey, and as soon as we'll change over to baseball, but so he's just having a blast out there, and it's amazing how much the kids can improve from even week to week at that age.
And we did get the W. Can we? Is it safe to say we got the W there?
We did. Yeah, and at that age, when one team runs up the score, they stop. You know, like say if it's like 10-0, they'll stop it at maybe 5-0 keep the scoreboard a little more respectable, but the kids were they blew them out, and it's hilarious when they come back to the bench and it's like, I scored, but they didn't change the board, so it's quite funny.
Yeah, all right, cool, guys. Let's get into it, because I've been spending most of the morning trying to figure out this show in my mind brain and wondering if we're going to be able to fit all of this in an orderly fashion. I'm going to try and keep this show to an hour, but you never know. So we are here today to discuss the fallout from UFC 209, which of course did not come to us live from the heart of Stockton, California, did come to us live from Nevada, Las Vegas, Nevada, from the T-Mobile Center, which is now apparently, James, the home of the UFC. Very exciting news.
Yeah. Yeah, shocking, isn't it, that they're going to have it in Vegas, that's where their home is. I don't know why they even announced that. It's so silly. Like, I guess they just need to make headlines.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what I thought, too, when I pulled up the video and I was listening to the guy from T-Mobile speak. I was just like, why am I – no, I'm going to stop this right now. It's not important. But what was important – and, guys, usually we start from the bottom of the main card and work our way to the main event, but today we're not going to do that because – the main event had a lot of talking points, shall we say, coming out of it. So let's go to the main card. Of course, we're going to the welterweight division. This was a title fight, Tyron Woodley versus the Wonder Man, as I like to call him, Stephen Thompson. Now, guys, this fight went all five rounds, and I'm looking at the UFC website right now, and the interesting thing that I am seeing is that they've put the judges' scores – what the judges' scores were on the screen, which, of course, they don't do with regularity. But, James, I'm going to throw this to you to start us off with this fight. Let's say not a lot of stuff happened. I mean, the crowd seemed to be very, very angry at the fighters. They seemed to both be respecting each other very much, and nothing really, really happened until maybe the fifth round, 30 seconds left, when Tyron Woodley almost sent Stephen Thompson into the land of winded ghosts. So let's get your breakdown because they want to hear your voice, not me.
Well, I think they want to hear your voice too, but I'll certainly chime in here and give you my take on the fight. Just disappointing. I think that's sort of the best way you can describe it. You know, I had my award show last year and I actually picked Tyron Woodley and Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, the first fight at UFC 205 as my fight of the year. And to come out the way they did in this fight, very tentative, not looking sort of like the action-packed fight we were used to at UFC 205, I was just very disappointing. And then to top it all off, you have a decision that I think for most was controversial. I picked Tyron Woodley heading into this rematch, and I felt like he did not win this fight. I know some people were talking about how that fourth round or the last round, sorry, should have been a 10-8. I don't agree with that. I think some people also were looking at the first round saying that should have been a 10-10. Don't agree with that either. I gave that one to Stephen Thompson. So it, you know, just a very uninspiring performance. I mean, this, here's the thing, guys, we going into UFC 209, you know, all the talk the day before was, you know, the fight getting canceled with Ferguson and Nurmagomedov. And it looked like that ship was going to turn around. You know, they had three upsets in a row earlier in the card. It seemed like they were going in a good direction, and then this main event just kind of ruined it for the UFC. And you know, this is the second pay-per-view in a row this year that they've had a disappointing pay-per-view, kind of with a controversial ending. Not a good start to the WME era for the pay-per-views, at least anyways, for the UFC. And yeah, just a very disappointing main event overall.
Yeah, James, on Thursday's show, a Smack My Picks Up / Proteus's primetime show, I mentioned, I kind of used a little bit of Bellator lingo for this fight. I compared it to, you know, their tentpole events. I thought that this was a great opportunity for the UFC and the Empire, WMIG, whatever, the Empire, to you know, make some headway, you know, to have a good fight card, and that didn't happen. But I digress. We'll get into that in a bit. So let's throw it to you, Josh. Now, James was comparing it, this fight, to their first fight, and of course, UFC 205, New York, from the MSG, was a great fight. Fight of the night performance, and as James said, he picked it for his fight of the year. We were talking on Twitter, you know, as the fight was going on, and you were saying to me that you were having quite a bit of tough time staying awake, because just for our West Coast friends and everybody on the other side of the world, it is very late in the Eastern time zone when these fights come on. And I know you UK fans are just yelling at me right now, so yes, we feel your pain. But let's go ahead, Josh, and get you to weigh in on this fight, because as I said, you had a little bit of trouble staying awake, paying attention to this fight.
Well, I didn't find it the most exciting fight. And as James was talking about the first fight being so great and so close, coming into this fight, the headline was who's going to make the adjustments and go from there. It seemed like both fighters just came into this fight with a lot more respect. And instead of making those adjustments, they just came in respecting and expecting this whatever their opponent was going to throw at them. So it created a lot of stalemates. And also, just to preface me falling asleep, I do get up at 1 a.m. for work on Saturday, so not a disrespect to the fighters. I can also respect, you know, a chess match out there and whatnot, but yeah, it definitely wasn't as exciting as, say, the first few fights on the card were.
Yeah, and as I had mentioned again on Thursday's show, if you're listening to this podcast now and you're unfamiliar with Josh's voice, please go back in the catalog of our shows. We've interviewed him, and of course, he was our man on the streets when the UFC was in Ottawa last year. So guys, James, you kind of touched on the judging, and again, you kind of gave some of your thoughts about it. Now, when I was looking at this fight, the one thing that you could really think about here, what the fighters gave us to look at, was octagon control, right? And I know that that's kind of a gray area, but that's the one thing that I was thinking to myself, okay, in the first two rounds, Stephen Thompson definitely having a lot of octagon control. And again, the judging was a talking point, and of course, the director of the Nevada State Athletic Commission came out and disagreed with the 10-8 in the fifth round. So, James, just elaborate a little bit more on what you said earlier about the judging and what we saw from the fallout.
Well, yeah, so I think I saw some people on, and, you know, I can't remember exactly what Bob Bennett said either, but I know that the first round, a lot of people were calling that a 10-10. So there was a bit of controversy there as far as, you know, how do you score that? I know they have the new rules. So there's, you know, there's some people who actually scored this fight a draw, and I could see that, because if you scored the first round a 10-10, then that would have ended up a draw. Conversely, if you would have scored the last round a 10-8, because, you know, really Thompson didn't do much in that round, and, you know, Woodley almost finished him at a certain point, you could have argued a 10-8. That also would have equaled a draw if you went that first round a 10-9 for Thompson even. But still, I don't think the last round was a 10-8. I think, even though Woodley was close to finishing, we're not going to count the first, you know, 2 minutes of what Thompson was doing. I think that's ridiculous. And then of course, you know, the first round, like I said, I do think Thompson won that round. That's just me. You know, I could see a 10-10, but it's tricky. And I think the other thing that we have to consider here too is that, you know, Woodley's the champion, and they always say, you know, if you want to beat the champ, you gotta beat the champ, right? So yeah. Maybe people were looking at it from the perspective of, you know, Thompson didn't exactly steal it. I mean, he wasn't exactly aggressive himself, so it's a tough fight to call, but I certainly feel like Thompson should have been the winner in that one.
I agree with you. I gave Thompson the first, the second, the fourth. Of course, you have to give Woodley the fifth because of, you know, he did do what he did. But again, I don't agree with the 10-8. Let's throw to you, Josh. Let's get your thoughts on the judging and how they came across this, and, you know, Tyron Woodley still remaining the champ.
Yeah, it's going to be a boring show because I agree with you guys. First of all, I'm not a judge, though. I'm just a fan over here. So the 10-10 never really came into my mind for the first round. I thought Wonderboy just controlled the center of the octagon. And, you know, I think Woodley had maybe one big blitz in the whole round. So I would have leaned towards Wonderboy in the first round. Same with the second round, I gave to Wonderboy. Woodley, I gave the third. Wonderboy, I gave the fourth. And then the fifth, I gave to Woodley, obviously. And not in a 10-8. I think it was just, you know, a 10-9. He didn't dominate the round. He was, you know, the most action in the whole fight was in the fifth round. And he was, you know, maybe close to finishing. But I don't know if that's a 10-8. Like I said, I'm not a judge, just a fan over here. But, yeah, that's how I scored the fight.
Yeah, okay, and I, James, you mentioned that they were using the new rules, and I heard, I can't remember where it was, whether it was on one of the post-fight shows or what, or maybe it was Dominic Cruz that said that they weren't implementing them until June. So I don't know if it's all kinds of gray areas, and, you know, again, we were speaking about transparency with the new owners, but we're not getting any of that. So it's okay that we all agree, and let's get you to weigh in quickly, James, on the 10-10. I'm not a big fan of using it. Josh isn't a big fan of using it. I mean, our boy Gorgeous George from MMA Junkie Radio, of course, is not a fan of using it, and I kind of get the feeling that you feel the same way about it. We should just use
oh,
the
you,
10-9
you would,
there
you would
because...
think correctly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. No, I was going to say, no, I completely agree. I think you have to pick a winner. Sorry to interrupt. I just feel that it's one of those things where, I think, and especially in this case, I feel like Thompson did do enough to steal that round and to take it. And as far as the rules go, I'm not 100% sure if they are using it. I was under the assumption they were, but it's so confusing. It's not very public because I know people thought that they were going to use it at the beginning of this year, and then we found out that they were using the old rules for some of the Fight Night cards and everything else. So a lot of miscommunications right now. The fact that I don't even know the right answer just tells you, you know, how bad the information is out there.
Yeah. Agreed. If you don't know, then we don't know. That's exactly it. Okay, guys. I think we put a bow on that. Unless anybody else has anything more to say about Woodley, again, he never seems to be doing himself any favors. You know, post-fight press conferences, wearing his sunglasses indoors. I know Josh has a big problem with that, and of course I do as well. Anybody have anything else to say about this and what, you know, going forward, Woodley retaining that belt?
Don't have much to say other than I think that you know, Woodley didn't do himself any favors, unfortunately. And I think, I think people are this. I mean, the welterweight division could not be worse at this point. That fight last night reminded me a lot of when Tim Sylvia was the heavyweight champion and just having these really stinking performances. It actually reminded me a lot of the fight against Jeff Monson at UFC 65, which just nobody was doing anything. And, you know, Sylvia ended up winning a unanimous decision. So, I think Woodley's got an uphill battle and he can blame it on whatever he wants. But he did himself no favors last night, you know, for being this exciting fighter that we're supposed to care about.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, James. He didn't do him.
Go ahead.
Yeah, he didn't do himself any favors last night or even leading up to this fight this week. All the people were talking about the other fight with Khabib and Ferguson, and he just seemed content to be in the shadows. And he didn't seem, you know, he just went into the media, in my opinion, with a sore attitude, the one embedded, or a poor attitude. The one embedded showed him in the van on the way to media, and he's just like, I'm going to answer all the questions basically by saying the greatest welterweight of all time. Like, give me a break, man. Like, there's Matt Hughes out there, which is still miles ahead of him. And then I'm a huge GSP homer, first of all. Let's get that out there for those that don't know that. But yeah, not even close, man. And everyone, like, the criticism on GSP is he was a boring fighter, this and that. Yeah, but he at least took the guys down and they had to work off their back. He didn't, it wasn't, you know, it was a different, I don't know, it's a different style. There was at least action, in my opinion. Again, GSP homer bias there. But yeah, I just don't think he's doing himself any favors. But then he's the first one to complain about his situation. And so that's all I got to say. And I try to be a positive guy, so I don't want to tweet or I don't want to say this. But yeah, that's just how I'm feeling. I think he could help himself out instead of to make up for some of the things he's complaining about.
Yeah, I agree. You mentioned, Josh, you mentioned what the co-main or what the original co-main was. Which we did not get. And let's kind of, before we get into the co-main, Vanata versus Tamer, let's kind of talk about Tony Ferguson and Khabib Nurmagomedov being canceled or being pulled from the card, because we didn't get to talk about it on Thursday's show because, of course, it happened on Friday morning. And if we are to believe the time frame that Dana White put out, it was about, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning, Friday morning, when he received notice. And he said to us, well, I knew then that the fight was going to be off. However, I watched 2 hours of the weigh-ins where we were being teased whether this fight was going to happen or not. So if he knew at 4 o'clock in the morning, come on, UFC, give me a break here. Give the journalists who are there doing the play-by-play of the weigh-ins a break. Anyways, Josh, let's throw to you. Your thoughts on Ferguson Khabib being scrapped, and of course Tony Ferguson choosing or not taking a fight, which of course I believe was the right decision.
Oh, like, completely heartbroken, I guess. That's the same thing. Like, I was just the same as everyone else. I was looking forward to this fight. all week long. Like, I was texting you. I'm like, fight week. I'm pumped up for an event. Because let's be real. You don't get as jazzed for every single event since there's so many. But, yeah, and then you just said, come on, UFC, about knowing at 4 in the morning. How about come on, UFC, for not giving Ferguson the same amount of money to take a fight with, say, the Menace, his name slipped, Michael Johnson, who was in studio on Junkie on Friday. It's like that, from what I was reading, which is not, I'm not a journalist or anything, but it was, they offered them the fight, but didn't, they offered him, it wasn't for the belt, and then it wasn't for the same amount of money. So you want this guy to step up, potentially risk his title run on one day notice, but you don't want to give him anything to compensate for it. Sounds pretty typical of the UFC, but yeah, just heartbroken, I guess. That's my feelings when I found out the fight was scrapped.
Yeah, I like to call that the Daniel Cormier treatment. We made that boy fight on 200 and paid him a lot less money. James, let's throw to you. What were your thoughts about the fight being canceled? Because I remember speaking to you on Twitter, and you were just getting back from your day job, and you were like, "Oh, I'm just catching up on the news now." So, what were your thoughts when you got home from work, and all of a sudden that fight was pulled?
Yeah, I don't want to be overdramatic here, but devastating sort of comes to mind. This could have been the best lightweight fight of all time, and I don't hold that back by any means. You have two guys in the prime of their careers taking on each other, and it falls apart again. This was a fight that was supposed to happen, last year, and it falls apart. Now you've got, Khabib off this card for a couple things on it. First off, if you're Khabib's team, why aren't you telling the UFC you're going to the hospital and all these things? Why aren't you going with the UFC doctors? It seemed like there was a little bit of fishiness going on with that as far as not communicating with the UFC. And then, we find out later that Khabib was going to get, $500,000 just to show up. And it's like, man, what a wasted opportunity here. And a lot of people forget Khabib has actually missed weight before. The fight against Abel Trujillo at UFC 160 was actually a catchweight bout at 158 pounds because Nurmagomedov missed weight in that fight as well. So now you've got the question of not just Khabib missing out on this huge card, but also the fact, is he going to compete at lightweight anymore? I mean, we've seen what's happened with guys like Calvin Gastelum and Johnny Hendricks being forced to move up a weight class because of this. And you know what? The person who's probably the happiest about this is Conor McGregor, because I don't think they'll ever fight at this point. Khabib sort of missed his opportunity, missed the boat here, and it would not surprise me if the UFC just goes ahead with, assuming McGregor isn't fighting Floyd Mayweather, if they do Tony Ferguson and Conor McGregor next. I had a tweet out on Friday, sort of kind of as a joke, but also, somewhat serious too, if they rebook this fight for Buffalo, because the Buffalo card's not looking so hot if you look outside the top two fights. That would be a great addition to that card, but I don't know what's going to happen. All I know is that this is a huge miss for Khabib and a huge miss for the fans too, because I think we really missed out on, the two best lightweights in that division outside of Conor McGregor.
That's interesting, James.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I just, that's interesting that you think, they're just going to skip the Khabib and, he missed his chance, because when I opened up my browser to Junkie this morning, first of all, it was Tony Ferguson paid his fight purse, and then, goes on to say that he wants Conor in his next fight, which I don't know why him getting paid his goddamn fight purse is news. That should be just a given. But that would be a shame for Khabib and for him if he misses this chance, because, it was a great matchup. Everyone was looking forward to it. Sorry to cut in there, Proteus.
No, you're fine. That's all good. I don't know what my point was anymore, but that's all good. No.
Sorry, man.
It's okay. So let's kind of put a bow on that. And I would really like to see this fight, as you said, James, move to Buffalo. I mean, I'm going to that event. That would be fantastic for me to go and see live. So, selfishly, yes, let's move it to Buffalo. But it does raise concerns about Khabib. And as you mentioned, James, he has missed weight before. He's not that he's a chronic weight misser, or he's not Johnny Hendricks or anything like that. But it is a concern. It is a concern when somebody's health is on the line. And Dana White was saying, well, he's not cutting weight properly. And these guys are at the highest level, and they cut weight all the time. I think maybe it's just Nurmi's been cutting weight for such a long period of time. I mean, we see, again, with Johnny Hendricks, to point out. I mean, the body just can't take these weight cuts. And we've gone on and on about weight cuts on this show and how we don't like them. And I'm sure you'll agree with me, James, that, you know, it's going to be a problem moving forward for some of these guys to try and keep cutting this weight.
Yeah, and you know something. There's a couple things kind of on weight cutting that that I think is interesting. Number one, why do these fighters all have to weigh in the morning? Why couldn't some weigh in the morning, some weigh in at night? They have to do the weigh in anyways. You know, I wonder if that might make a bit of a difference. I know they do it in the morning because it's safer and they have more time to rehydrate. I get that part, but I think they should have the option just in case things are going awry. Because I think I forget Mike Bond had the stat on Junkie, but there's been I forget how many fighters that have missed weight since this morning weigh in has come through, and it's been like triple since like you know what they had before. And the other thing that I would you know recommend as well, you saw it as doing this testing. Why aren't they checking these guys on their weight at this point? You know, I think that's something they could do just to see you know if someone's 40 pounds. Overweight, you know, 2 weeks to go to a fight, they might be able to kind of step in there and say, hey, what are you doing? You got to start cutting this weight or you got to start eating better. I mean, I think that's something they need to look into as well. But it's just so disappointing because, you know, Khabib gets off this fight. We just had Ian McCall a couple weeks ago have an issue with a weight cut. The fans are missing out on these fights because these fighters are, you know, having these health issues with not being able to get down to their weight class.
Yeah, I mean, weight cutting is very dangerous, and I think we've covered it. So let's move on to what we did get in that co-main event slot, which, guys, did turn out to be a very, very exciting fight. We had Lando Venata versus David Tamer, and I was saying on the Smack My Picks Up edition, I picked Lando, but I was like, you can't rule Tamer out because he's been his two fights in the UFC. Both ended in the second round, both by TKO, KO. So let's get into this fight. Josh, what were your thoughts about this? I mean, we were heartbroken about the co-main event, but then the co-main event that we lost, but now this co-main event that we got really turned out to be a very entertaining fight.
Oh, yeah, it was a great fight. In the first half of the first round, Tamer, you know, Venata came out firing and he looked good. He was controlling, he was pushing him back. And then, I thought he won the first couple rounds, like in general, sorry. I thought he won the first couple rounds and Tamer won the first couple rounds, but Lando was a little more flashy, but Tamer, I felt he was throwing the heavier shots in the fight. But yeah, Lando, what a chin on that kid. I just felt Tamer was the busier fighter. But yeah, that's all I got on that fight.
Sure, absolutely. It was, as you were saying, it was a very, very good display of striking. Both guys, very good strikers. I mean, James, when have we seen a capoeira cartwheel kick land so flushly? I mean, it was super exciting.
This actually worked out in the UFC's favor. You know, a lot of these matchups, there was a lot of, you know, win-lose situations. But this was one of those ones where I actually think it worked in the UFC's favor, even though Lando Venata lost and he had all that momentum from UFC 206. Sure. David Tamer, this guy just won himself a bunch of fans in this co-main event slot. He beat a guy in Lando Venata who's a fan favorite. And it was a great fight, guys. I mean, we're looking at the future of the lightweight division right here. And this, you know, Tamer's only 27 years old. People forget he was on The Ultimate Fighter and he actually lost to Marcin Wozoriak on the show. He lost a majority decision, and now he's won three straight fights in the UFC. This guy, I'm excited to see what's next for him, and I think it really showcases, you know, just how deep some of these divisions are, especially lightweight, where we're seeing David Tamer. Now, Lando Venata, interesting stat here, which someone tweeted last night. I would love to give them credit. I just can't remember who did it. But Jackson, Brandon Gibson cornered fighters this year are 0-8. I don't know if you guys are aware of that. Pretty crazy stat. Jackson Wink going through some rough times right now. But Lando will be back. He's one of those guys that he could lose fights like this, and the UFC will still bring him back. He's entertaining. So I don't think it hurts his stock, but just back to the drawing board for him.
Yeah, it was definitely again, nobody lost in this fight, I don't think. I mean, yes, they were promoting Lando, and yes, they were trying to push him. He lost, but he lost in a way that the fans were up on their feet, cheering out of their seats. Right, Josh? I mean, this doesn't hurt Lando's stock like James is saying. He's going to move on, but we have another new star in Tamer, correct?
Oh, absolutely. And Yeah, one of the quotes that Tamer gave in his pre-fight interview that they showed before the fight was he was trying to take the UFC striking to a new level. I wasn't too familiar with him before this fight, to be honest. And I heard that, and then in the first couple minutes, Lando landed that kick, and I sort of give him an eye roll on that quote. But he showed heart. He came. He survived the first round, came back or whatever. How did you guys score the first round? Actually, it was a 30-27. Was it? Is that how you scored it too, James? All three rounds for Tamer.
I think I had it actually 29-28 for Tamer. I think I gave the second to Vanata. I'd have to go back and watch it again. But it was one of those things where it could have gone either way. Like both guys were really going out there and kind of implementing their game plan. So it was one of those close fights. I don't think you could go wrong with a 30-27 scorecard though.
Okay, yeah, because I'm terrible at judging, first of all. But I didn't even put a score for the first round because I was unsure. So I left that blank, but. But yeah, Tamer, and then a couple nasty knees in the third round there. I don't know, Lando. To answer your question, no, Lando's stock didn't drop. It just showed he has a great chin and he can hang in there. He almost looks too comfortable. He needs a little sense of urgency in a sense. But his stock did not drop, in my opinion.
That's one thing that I was finding with Lando is that, yes, he has got lots of confidence, and especially just in this fight. He's lots of confidence, but maybe that confidence was a little too much. I think maybe he was thinking he was going to get another highlight reel KO, and maybe that got in his mind brain, and you know, I don't know. He did seem to be kind of, you know, nonchalant. I don't know, maybe he just had been rocked in the head a bunch of times. So let's move on to... I guess it's lightweight, correct? Because Evans moved down to face Kelly at. Am I correct? Am I saying that correctly, guys? Sorry, I'm having a
middleweight.
Middleweight. Thank you very much. Gotcha. So Rashad Evans coming back, dropping weight, as I said, against Daniel Kelly at middleweight. And guys, I called this one. This is the way I saw it going down. I just don't have the confidence in Rashad Evans, or as we like to call him, Hashad. What did you see here, James? Did you see anything redeeming in for Hashad in his career, or is this pretty much the end of the line?
Yeah, like yourself, I picked Dan Kelly in this fight. And, you know, just aside from the injuries and the layoff, I also didn't like the fact, I don't know if you guys caught this on Embedded, but Rashad basically said he was training by himself because of the whole Black Zillion split.
Yes.
So that didn't come across well either. And you've got a guy in Dan Kelly who, again, is just surprising people in these fights. And I think this is the perfect setup for him to get it done, and he certainly did. I think Rashad is just too much wear and tear. You know, MMA is a cruel sport sometimes. It's unfortunate that Rashad is, you know, finishing his career off, losing to guys like Dan Kelly. But credit to Dan Kelly, 39 years old, 6-1 in the UFC. Nobody on Tough Nation thought this guy would go on the run he's gone on. So that's kind of a neat story, but too bad for Rashad. I have no idea what you do with Rashad at this point. I would hope that it's a couple more fights and then that's it for him. Great career, but just disappointing to see him, lose to Dan Kelly. And to be honest, he should have done middleweight a long time ago. I think it's the right weight class for him, but unfortunately he lost here.
And Josh, you want to give us your thoughts on this fight and what you see going forward with Hashad?
Well, with Hashad, I'm not too sure. The training thing that James brought up there, yeah, that's an issue. You can't be training alone. Like, if we go back to Rashad's success, he was at Jackson's. He had a group of killers around him, pushing him in training. He wasn't the coach. You can't be the best person on your team or the best person in training. You can't get better that way. So for him, training alone is just that's a huge red flag. And then, yeah, the first round, I thought Kelly was sort of controlling. He was pushing Rashad back, controlling the center. He was countering a little bit. He had that straight left that he was countering with. And then in the second round, he started using that little trip, that little was it like the lead leg? He's tripping the lead leg and then following it with a few punches. Rogan seemed to love that that technique there. And then I don't know. And then in the third, Rashad looked better. He was pushing Kelly back, but for the first half of the round, I guess. But yeah, Rashad looked like, you know, he faded as the fight went on, and And even in the early fight, in the early part of the fight, he was throwing single punches. He wasn't throwing combos. I don't know if Rashad needs to fight anymore. That's up to him. But he had great fights previously. So I don't like to remember these guys on, you know, 4 or 5 fight loss streaks or whatever it's going on. But yeah, that's what I got.
Yeah, Kelly, as you were saying, has been looking really good, James. As you were saying, surprisingly enough, I mean, the guy is, we were calling him Dad Bod, and of course everybody has been calling him Dad Bod, but, you know, came out there, and as you said, Josh, I thought really controlled Rashad, and Rashad just couldn't get anything going. And maybe, James, I wanted to ask you this question because maybe you have more information than I do. I found this breakup of the Black Zillions very, very interesting. You know, 1 minute they're all the rage, and then they're splitting up and going their separate ways. Do you have any more information on what kind of happened with them at all?
Well, Chuck Mendenhall actually has a great article up on MMA fighting explaining sort of what happened. And the one thing I really like about this article is Chuck actually got both sides of the story. He spoke to Glenn Robinson and he spoke to Henry Hooft. Basically, what I think is you just had too many cooks in a kitchen. You had Henry Hooft, who wanted to do his own thing and was, you know, wanting to only train with certain fighters. And then you had Glenn Robinson, who had his vision of how he wanted the gym to go. So naturally, when you have two big egos like that, you're going to have a split. And it seems like, you know, I talked, for example, to like Andre Sukumtah, who made his debut last night. You know, he said for him, it didn't really affect him that much because the guys that he was training with, they just went over with Henry Hooft. But it sounded like, you know, people like Rashad, who maybe were training with the group, ended up having to train on their own, because I think it's sort of split between Henry Hooft and his guys, and then you have Neil Melanson, Tyrone Spong, Rashad, Jay-Z Cavalcante, those guys on their side training in another facility. So it's a bit interesting. And of course, fighters that you know competed for or trained at Black Zillions were all managed by Glenn Robinson. That's not the case now. Some guys now being represented by Ali Abdelaziz and some other managers. So it's an interesting thing, but I imagine, you know, that happens at certain gyms.
Yeah. Okay. Very interesting story. And it's kind of weird, but I guess these things happen with, you know, guys with egos. And it was the gentleman who won the Ultimate Fighter that they had the ATT versus Black Zillions that was saying that he didn't get any money for that at all. Like he was promised money and he wasn't getting any money. So that was kind of a red flag for me way back when that was happening. So kind of crazy. And I don't know what you do with Rashad next. I think he just should pursue his career on the Fox desk and just go with that, because he's from what I hear, because I don't watch them, he's very good on the desk, right, guys? I mean, and maybe he should just focus on that moving forward. Okay, let's transition again. Another fight that was moved up onto the main card: Amanda Bobby Cooper versus Calvillo. I hope I'm saying that right, Tony. He always is trying to educate me how to say these Brazilian, Portuguese names and these Spanish names. So, guys, unfortunately, I'm going to pull the curtain back here a little bit. I was on baby duty at this point, but my wife was nice enough to take notes for me. But instead of taking my wife's notes, why don't we talk to you guys? James, why don't you start first, and then Josh, we'll go to you. And just talk amongst yourself, because I've got a fire to put out here, and I'll come back in a minute, okay?
Cool. Sounds good. We'll talk away, and then I'll throw to Josh. I'll start first here. I had the opportunity to speak with both of these fighters before they fought, and you know, Cynthia Calvillo was the favorite on the judges or on the betting odds going into this fight, and the reason for that is, you know, the team at that she trains at, Team Alpha Male, was raving about this girl, and you know, she came off a big win earlier this year at LFA. She defeated Montana Stewart, and that's sort of what got her into the UFC, and she looked great last night. I thought from bell to bell, she was able to get it to the ground, use her superior grappling, and get the submission win. And she's someone I think the UFC has got to start looking at. I mean, this is a good opportunity. You know, it sucks that Ferguson and Khabib were off this card, but you got this women's fight that got a lot of shine last night, and I think it's good. You've got an undefeated fighter in Cynthia Calvillo, who I think the UFC should take advantage of the situation and really push her, because she's got a great personality, comes from a great team, and is, you know, it's just a good story for her coming in here. And as far as Amanda Cooper goes, unfortunate now, you know, she's 1-2 in the UFC now. You know, I don't know what you do from here. It seems she's still very limited on the ground, and I think that's hurting her in certain fights. It certainly did last night. But again, I think the UFC will give her another fight. There's rumblings of a card coming up in Detroit later this year. She's a Michigan native. I see that being a possibility for her, having one more fight with the UFC there. And I'll throw it over to Josh. Josh.
Wow. Yeah, tough to follow. But Cooper's stand-up, she looked good and comfortable right in the early part of the round one, until she threw a kick that Calvillo caught and then dumped her. But and then Cooper scrambled, and she, in the scramble, she was trying for a takedown, a double leg, which turned into another crazy roll, where that's where Calvillo ended up. I don't know if she ended up on her back or on top, but she ended up eventually getting to her back. And then that it was pretty much good night, Irene. And the rear naked choke came in. Do you know, did she roll right to her back, James? Do you know, or was it just the top position?
I believe it was the top position. I can't remember. It happened so quickly. It was one of those things where I think I was like tweeting, and then I just happened to see Calvillo, you know, get the submission in there. So it was kind of crazy. But no, good win. And, you know, I think, yeah, you're right. Cooper's stand-up did look good, but that's, you know, she's been boxing since she's 11. And that's sort of her bread and butter. But you know, she's unfortunately losing these fights, you know, on the ground. So, you know, that's something she's going to definitely have to work on going forward here. As far as you know, the women's division goes, I'm guessing Proteus still isn't back. Any other thoughts on this fight that you have?
I do have a couple thoughts on the last, but not on this fight. Can I go back, Proteus? Do you mind? Just to the Rashad fight. A couple things.
Go back real quick.
Sorry, does the commission have to approve a tape job on the knee like that? Like, is it like a hand wrap where if you tape up like an ankle or a knee like that, is that something the commission has to look over first? And then second point I was making while we were listening, Rashad's corner told him he was 2 rounds up. Like, that's terrible corner advice going into the third round. But sorry to backtrack. Those are just two things I had I wrote down here while we were talking.
James, yeah, I don't know the answer to that brace thing. I was going to say the brace thing, I'm not 100% sure of. I would imagine they saw that and they were just like, okay, I guess it's okay. So I'm not sure about that. The Rashad corner thing, there's two schools of thought on this. There's one thought where it's like, if you're down a round, it kills your confidence. Like, you think, oh crap, you know, whatever. And then there's another school of thought that says, that, you know, if you lie to your fighter, then it gives them confidence, being like, okay, I got this, I can do this, right? So it's like a mental thing, but I'm with you. I think if you're losing, you should be told that. You shouldn't be given BS. And that way, you know, you don't coast. Not saying that's what Rashad did, but sometimes that's what happens.
Okay, cool. Sorry for going back.
That's okay. I'm going to bring it back to the ABC fight because the one thing that my wife, she was very excited to tell me about it this morning with her notes, is one thing that she did notice was that scramble. And she was very impressed, and she noted that Dominic Cruz on the broadcast was very, very you know, had nothing but nice things to say, not only about the women's divisions or the women's fights themselves, but of course of their ability to pull off, you know, things that we haven't seen, like men move in a very different way than women, and those kind of roles that they, like you guys had pointed out, she was very impressed with it. So, and let's talk about that a little bit more. I mean, that was some serious ground game. And James, as you said, ABC is more of a stand-up fighter, and she needs to improve that ground game. So maybe that was something to factor in as well. James?
For sure. And I think, you know, Calvillo is sort of, you know, part of the new breed of women that we're seeing going through, you know, the strawweight division. And I think, you know, if you look at that division right now, like, who are some of your prospects, really, if you think about it? I mean, you know, Paige VanZant, I guess, is still sort of a work in progress at this point. But, you know, Calvillo is someone else that I think you could add to that list. You know, she's got a good resume here. I mean, granted, she's 29 years old, but I think she's young enough in the division that, you know, there is some promise there as far as what she can do.
Okay, so let's just, I didn't give the stats on what happened in this round. Of course, it was a winner by submission, Cynthia Calvillo. Sorry, guys, my computer went down, so
So that was the fire I was putting out. I could not give you any stats. I do apologize. So, and of course, that came, the finish came at 140 in round one. Now, guys, I want to, I'd like to move on, if we're good with this fight, to Overeem versus Hunt. This was the curtain jerker for the pay-per-view portion of the show. And I forgot to mention at the beginning of the show, guys, I'm going to get you to think about this right now, kind of get it in your mind brain while we are discussing this fight. I'm going to ask you for a fight of the night from that wasn't on the main card. It could be from the Fight Pass portion, or from the Fox Sports 1 or TSN 2, as we all watched it in Canada. Spotlight fight of the night. So keep that in your mind brain. Let's move on to the heavyweight division. We go Overeem versus Mark Hunt. Alistair Overeem versus Mark Hunt. My apologies. This fight ended in round three at 3:17 of the third round, as I mentioned, by, let's call it a KO, because that's pretty much what it was. Now, again, I was not present for this fight either, but my wife said that it was pretty much fought against the fence and then ended very spectacularly in the third round. Josh, do you want to lead us off here talking about Mark Hunt and Alistair Overeem?
Your wife nailed it, man. Sometimes it doesn't take a hardcore to judge a fight. That's what I've seen. I've seen a lot of Reem in the first round. He was a little bit busier. Hunt landed, again, heavier shots, but Reem controlled him. He was dictating where the fight was. Same for the rest of the fight, basically. Held him against the cage, elbows by Hunt. You know, Hunt landed a couple, I think an elbow, or he's landing shots, but Reem was doing more. He was busier controlling the majority of the fight. And then, the finish came from a big knee in the third round.
Yeah, and there were some talking points that came out of this fight, too, that I'm concerned about. But, James, let's just get your feel on this fight. And, of course, there's no controversy here. There was a KO at the end. So what did you think of the fight? I'm surprised it got out of the first round, to be honest with you.
See, I'm not. This fight almost played out to a T like I thought it was going to. I thought Overeem was going to win a decision. He was going to play it safe, you know, just sort of pick his shots, trying to avoid, the power of Mark Hunt. And he was almost doing that until out of nowhere he just knocks out Hunt. So I didn't expect that just because Hunt's been knocked out in his last couple of fights, but he's a guy that generally is known for having that iron chin. And, an impressive win for Overeem here. I don't think he looked amazing, but I think he did what he had to do to get the job done. Obviously, he got the knockout there, but I'm not willing to throw him back in the title contention here. I think he's been the same fighter, sort of this reborn fighter that we've seen leading up to the 3-fight win streak before he lost to Stipe. Overeem, he's a good tactician. I think he showed that, and that's sort of what I take away from this. And for Mark Hunt, you know, a lot of punishment here. He's getting up there in age. Might be time to call it quits.
Yeah, as you're saying, I mean, Mark has taken some big shots, and that probably was one of the biggest shots. I mean, Alistair, as we know, can throw them knees with the best of them. And I saw the replay, obviously, on the broadcast of that KO, and man, vicious. And, you know, Mark took a couple shots on the way down because Alistair is just that good. Now, some flags for me at the post-fight press conference. We saw the appearance of Lord Dana again, which I find fascinating in this new world, because he was hidden for so long, and then when things go wrong, we see Dana again. I just find it fascinating. And so he comes out, and he's speaking on Alistair's behalf that Alistair was in the hospital 24 hours previous to this fight, had a number of IV bags administered due to food poisoning. This is a red flag for me. Okay, Mark Hunt already is in a lawsuit with the UFC. The UFC is trying to dismiss this lawsuit. I just thought, you know, if anybody's going to be pissed off about Alistair Overeem receiving an IV bag, it's definitely Mark Hunt. James, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, you can't do that. I don't know. I think that this is only adding more fuel to the fire for Mark Hunt. And that stuff, I mean, you shouldn't have done it. And two, that stuff shouldn't be made public. I mean, I should, but, you know, it's it's certainly not helping Mark Hunt's case. Or sorry, is helping Mark Hunt's case.
Exactly. Josh, you good? You want to weigh in?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And it just because, and I didn't read any articles, but I just see the headline of this weekend that Khabib's camp should have called Dana instead of going straight to the hospital. It just makes me wonder why? Like, if I need medical attention, I want a doctor. I don't know. I don't want Dana White, you know, but what else is he doing to salvage some of these fights or blah, blah, blah. But yeah, it does look bad when Dana sits down there and takes over the press conference just to make sure everyone knows that. I think he was trying to help out Alistair, but yeah, it just made it look a little more sketchy.
Yeah, seriously, guys. I mean, some of the things that have been coming out in this post, USADA, and you know what? DJ Tony warned us. He said, be careful. Be careful what you wish for. USADA is not all they're cracked up to be. And I just found this, yeah, very concerning, Josh. Like you said, hey, you should have come to our doctors. We would have made it happen for you. But instead, you went to the hospital where, guess what? You're going to get delayed. You're going to have to sit in the waiting room for a while. And as Canadians, we know all about sitting in waiting rooms, don't we, boys?
Yes.
So I just thought it was very, very interesting. Not only the fact that we know Alistair Overeem had a more than one IVs, very, very concerning for me. And secondly, I had a little issue with Alistair's physique. Alistair looked very fit, okay? And that's how I'm going to put it. He looked very fit, and I mean, he always looks very fit, but we know Alistair's past, and I'm not throwing accusations anybody's way, but he did look noticeably different to me from his last fight to this fight, and he explained it away in the post-fight press conference as, I've been training since my last loss, and I can see that he maybe is doing that, and of course, he's at a very good camp, but he also is attributing a lot of his striking acumen to people that have been around him for a number of years. Just a lot of strange things popped into my mind, at this post-fight press conference. Anybody have a comment? Any more comments on that at all? Or should we move on?
Just that we'll wait till the results come back. I mean, nothing surprises me anymore. But yeah, you bring up a good point there. We'll wait and see when the facts come out, but certainly interesting to think about.
Okay,
yeah,
guys,
I got nothing.
Let's go. That's good. That's fine. Let's go on and get you guys quickly because I've got one more topic that I want to talk about before we end the show, maybe two. So let's go ahead and get your spotlight fight of the night now, a fight that was not on the main card, either off the Fox Sports 1 or the TSN 2 broadcast or the Fight Pass card, because I heard, I didn't see them, but I heard that the Fight Pass card was very good.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the obvious choice would be Darren Elkins upsetting Mirsad Bektik. Elkins is losing the fight, and then he comes out of nowhere and does a head kick and lands some punches and finishes off Bektik, who is the biggest favorite on this card. It's one of the biggest upsets in UFC history. So I think that, for me, has to be the fight of the night just because of the drama that unfolded. Runner-up could easily be Alcantara and Sanders. Similar situation, Sanders, dominating the fight, and then he gets knee-barred in the second round. So, there's lots of options. Even the opening fight between Sukumta and Morales, I thought it was a great fight, and you almost thought Morales was going to lose that in the third when he was eating those body shots, but he was able to get it to the ground and earn his first UFC win. So lots of good fights in the undercard.
Josh, spotlight fight of the night?
Yeah, for me, that first one, the Morales and Solka, who's your mama? That was a great fight. And in that third round, like James said, And you guys were talking earlier about video games. I'm not a video game guy, and if I do play, it'd be like I'm the button masher. And if I'm playing UFC, I'm going to head kick. But that's what it felt like when he was fighting that third round. It was just hook to the liver. And it reminded me of the Boss Rutten-inspired Team Tompkins shot to the liver, Sam Stout used to always throw. But over, and it's almost like you got to stop, right? You can't believe he's going to throw another one. But, that was a great fight to open the night off. And then And then, James nailed it already with the Elkins comeback. There was 3 minutes left in the Elkins fight. I was thinking about going up, grabbing another drink and chilling out, you know, like, but I actually stayed. I chilled out, but I was thinking, this is, you know, he got a takedown, right? I think 3 minutes left. And I'm like, oh, here we go. Bektik's going to ride this out, decision 30-27 or worse or whatever, maybe. So James covered it already.
All right, guys. So the one fight that I did catch on the FS1 card was the curtain jerker, the Godbear versus Spitz fight. Of course, Spitz took this fight on very, very short notice. And I thought, guys, I thought he looked okay. He has showed a great deal of heart. Godbear, of course, came back a little bit in the end of the third and sealed the deal. Obviously, he's going to be winner by 30-27s all the way across. But I thought that Spitz looked good. He looked good, and I'd like to see him again. These guys that are thrown into the mix real quickly, short notice, I like to give them an extra chance, and I thought Spitz looked really good. Coming out of that, I believe it's Spokane, Washington, is where he's coming out of the fight camp there. I can't remember the name. Juliana Pena trains there as well. I thought I'd like to see Spitz again. Anybody have a comment on that at all?
It's Sick Jitsu where he trains out of. That's Rick Little, who trains, Michael Chiesa, Sam Cecilia. I don't think Pena's there anymore because she moved to Chicago. But good point. But Spitz, just quickly, and then I'll let Josh kind of chime in here. 6'7", 82-inch reach advantage. I mean, this is 26 years old. I would like to see him with the full camp because we didn't really get to see what he's made of. Lots of promise there, though, for sure. That's all I got to say on that.
All I have to say is, great nickname, Daddy Long Legs. That's great. He took it on short notice. They said he replaced Todd Duffy, but, so they're heavyweights. So I thought Rogan was a little critical in the third round there when it was kind of a typical heavyweight fight. It wasn't, it slowed down a bit, but on the short notice and the fact that they are heavyweights, one thing stuck out was Rogan's commentary. I thought he was just a little bit critical on that. He should have given him more credit for the fact it's not a full camp he had there. But that's all.
Yeah. Okay. So let's just kind of transition into that because we've got to get out of here soon, guys. But let's talk about the three-man booth, okay? They did this experiment again with the three-man booth. They had Dominic Cruz, Joe Rogan, and, of course, John Anik. We saw one iteration of this previously with Daniel Cormier. I enjoyed Dominic Cruz a lot more than DC Daniel Cormier, and I enjoyed him the last time they had him on. They had a little experiment the UFC ran with Dominic Cruz being on the booth. I really enjoyed Dominic. He is very knowledgeable, and as we had seen in the week leading up, really doing his homework on not only the fighters, but getting their background, et cetera, et cetera. So, James, let's throw to you first, okay? What are your thoughts about not only the three-man booth, but, of course, Dominic Cruz's performance?
Like the three-man booth, I like it because I would hope that one of these days they're going to get Robin Black in there because I think he would add so much to the broadcast and gives him more of an opportunity if they were to keep the three-man booth going. But Cruz was flawless. I mean, it's really tough to win MMA fans over. We saw all the backlash that came out of Todd Grisham doing his job for UFC Halifax, which, by the way, I thought he was fine, but you know how MMA fans are. The fact that I didn't hear one or see one single complaint about Dominic Cruz last night shows you how good he is. He was smooth in his delivery. He was knowledgeable. He gave a lot of background information. He knew the techniques. This is a guy born for this job, and I hope they put him on more events because I learned so much last night from watching him.
Oh, me too, man. I mean, like I said, hang on one sec, Josh. I'll throw it to you in a second. As people who are regular listeners to this show know, usually when in the Goldberg era, I did not listen or did not watch fights with the sound on. I have been experimenting with the sound on, and last night I kept the sound on the whole time. It was intriguing. I thought John Anik. Sorry, before I get into my breakdown, Josh, please go.
I agree. And like James says, the MMA fans are fickle, right? They're complainers. So to see no or limited negative comments towards Cruz just shows you how well he did. So yeah, I agree. He crushed it. And he's got that personality type where he's not scared to call you on it. Like if Rogan were to say something where he's not scared to challenge Joe on anything, or say John Anik, and his knowledge is undeniable. Plus he's got that championship cage time in there. Like that's something, as knowledgeable as Rogan is, and as much as we all respect Rogan, he doesn't have the championship rounds, and he doesn't have the experience inside the cage that Dominic has. So yeah, they crushed it. And I'm an Anik guy too. I don't mind John. So yeah, I thought the three of them together are great. And yeah, let's, since this is the all Canadian show, Robin Black or say Mauro Ranallo would never hurt the issue either. Black. So yeah, that's all we got.
I actually agree. I would love to see finally Mauro Ranallo get into that spot in the UFC. I mean, he's one of the all-time greats in our sport. And yeah, Robin Black is good too, but I find them very similar, James. I mean, they're both kind of chaotic and, you know, kind of bipolar in that kind of sort of way. And it was funny. I told this story after UFC Toronto. I can't remember the number of the card, but we had Robin Black at the MMA meetup. And of course, as I explained to the audience, I mean, Robin Black was some sort of a rock star in his younger years. And it was kind of odd for me to see him there in real life. And I kind of just sat there and stood there and looked at him, and I didn't really say anything. And I was kind of embarrassed. I was like, oh, geez, I guess I got caught staring at, you know, a guy that had been, you know, a rock star in my youth. So it was kind of funny. And yes, it would be great to see Robin Black in that role also. One last thing, guys, before we get out of here, because we're at the top of the hour again. One thing that happened on Friday, as well as the fight falling out, was the GSP versus Big Bisping press conference. I'm not going to say anything until the end. Josh, if you saw this, please comment, and then we'll get your point of view.
Yeah, I've seen the press conference. I thought it was typical. I thought Bisping started it off a little fiery. Like, he started, I don't know, I was eye-rolling at the start. Like, you don't need to disparage GSP. There's not a lot of bad things you can say, but one of the main things he couldn't help but point out, when George is talking about all his fights, he's talking about Sean Sherk, BJ Penn, you know, all the fights from way back. He's like, yeah, those are, you know, like, BJ Penn's a featherweight right now. He's like, I'm a middleweight. And, first of all, I'm not a big fan of the return, just to put that out there. But since he's back, you can't deny that. And this is the matchup we're given. I think a lot of people just underestimate Michael Bisping. I think, and they have his whole career, except they were light heavyweights at the start. And then there were middleweights that were underestimating him. And then they were getting themselves involved in these tough fights. He's a tough matchup for anybody. I don't know if George, like he said, is smelling weakness with Bisping, but man, I think he's in for a tough fight. And then to keep going, if he does get through Bisping, it's just a dead end road, man. Like, you don't want any part of Yoel, or they just announced Whitaker and Souza. Like, so saying whoever the winner of that, like, you don't want the part of any of the top five, in my opinion. And then if he were to win and then go the other way for a money fight, whether it is Anderson Silva or the Conor McGregor, whatever they're talking, that's just going to piss people off by him avoiding Yoel, or avoiding, like, with the logjam that's already the middleweight division. It's not going to benefit his legacy, in my opinion, as much as if he just would have stayed put and left it all left us all wondering, right? But yeah, that's what I got.
James?
A couple things. The UFC missed the boat on this. They should have done George St. Pierre and Anderson Silva. That was the fight to do. It's a bigger name fight. It doesn't hold up a division, and it's a fight that I think George could win. This is a fight I'm not sure what's going to happen in this matchup with him and Michael Bisping. You know, I'm sure George wanted this fight. He wants to win a title. I'm sure this was part of the negotiating thing. So I understand that point of it. And, you know, for Bisping, once again, he's getting another fight that, you know, he has yet to face a contender in the division. He got to, you know, have Dan Henderson, and now he gets St. Pierre. So it's a little unfortunate. As far as the press conference go, just run-of-the-mill stuff. I was hoping they were going to announce when it's actually going to take place. If you caught Aaron Bronstetter's interview on TSN where he was talking with Dana White, it sounds like they're aiming for International Fight Week. That would make a lot of sense. That's the biggest card of the year, the pay-per-view that they do. So I'm guessing that's probably what they're going to aim for as far as when that fight's going to take place. But yeah, as you know, we're stuck with the matchup. It is what it is. I'm a little concerned, I got to be honest, and I'm with Josh. I didn't want George to come back, and I think one of the things we're going to see in this fight is that George isn't going to have the size and reach advantage like he's had against a lot of his previous opponents, and that's going to hurt him in this matchup. So I don't know how it's going to go. I'll watch it. I'm somewhat excited for it, but I'm not. To me, you should have done the Silva fight. I think that was a slam dunk, and I don't know why they didn't do it.
So I'm glad that I waited in order for me to comment on this press conference, because both of you guys are bearing lead. Bisping didn't show up on time, and two, he apparently appeared to show up a little bit inebriated. I mean, let's be honest. I wasn't too sure if he was going to fall off of that stage or trip while he was going over to do the face-offs, honestly. And George brought it up, and I was thinking it before George said it. But he did look a little bit wonky. And I thought it was hilarious that during this press conference that Bisping is trying to do, you know, his normal thing. He's trying to give GSP, what do they do over there in the UK? They give the two fingers peace sign the backwards way. And GSP was just laughing at him. He's just smiling and laughing. And you can't, like Josh said, you cannot disparage GSP. You just can't. The only thing, again, like you said, Josh, is that, and as you said, James, he's not going to have that weight advantage. What advantage he is going to have is that he's probably not going to have to cut any weight. To touch on the Anderson Silva thing, I think that the big money fight, yeah, maybe they dropped the ball, but you know what? Bisping does not want to fight Yoel. He wants to make a little bit of money. If he loses this fight, he says he's going to be out. So the boys on the junkie on the road show had mentioned that, you know, after GSP fights Bisping, and if he does win, then you know what, you've got that Silva fight. And you know, that really drives me crazy, because as anybody who listens to this show, I know they know that I'm a very big fan of meritocracy and doing things the correct way, but we see that the Empire is not interested in doing that. I commented on this fight. Again, Josh is right, you are right, James. We did not need to see the return of GSP, but if you look at the embedded and you look at some of the videos that they're putting out, George seems to be really, really happy to be back. One question I have, James, for you is, one, how did GSP get onto the embedded on a fight card that did not in any way have him on it? And he's on the embedded. And two, what did you think about his demeanor? He seemed very, very happy to be back.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. As far as him getting on, I'm sure there's like, oh, he's here, let's film this thing. Do you guys not think, though, they should have waited until, I guess because this card was already going on in Vegas, that they just decided to announce it? But it kind of took away from the title fight, because they could have had that suspense of knowing, hey, is the winner of this fight going to fight St. Pierre? I don't know why they had to rush and tell us that, especially if they don't even have a date and location yet. So I was a little confused by that. But yeah, I mean, he seems happy. He seems, you know, glad to be back. We'll see. I mean, we could see a different George in there, a better one, if anything, because, you know, he's injury free. He's had time to heal and rest up. He definitely took some beatings in those last couple of fights. So we'll see what happens.
And I think it's very, very important to note, and Josh, I'm going to throw back to you to get your comments, and then we're going to get you both out of here so you can enjoy the rest of your day. It's very important to note that he has not only still been training, you know, he's been in training as if, you know, it's part of his life still, and he's been training with Freddie Roach, which is one of the best
if not the best, boxing coaches in the world. And I think that's important to note. Josh?
Yeah, that's clearly, that's Freddie doesn't work with any MMA fighters, I think, if so, very few. So yeah, that's a big thing, but yeah, he's a boxing trainer. So in boxing, isn't reach and size and power, aren't those also big, big things to worry about? But yeah, and also if I can talk about the timing of this, do you guys, was this good timing or bad timing? Like before the Khabib fight fell off, right? Like everyone was fired up for 209, like, and Woodley and Wonderboy, they could have used a little more heat, you know, like to catch up to the co-main event. So I personally felt like it was bad timing for them to announce this. And also just because also it took away that chance for Woodley or for Wonderboy to be fighting for the money fight with GSP, because he's a money fight in himself. So for those guys, they all of a sudden they're not fighting for the chance. Even if they knew, like, they still could have had the chance of knowing the winner could potentially get a fight with GSP. And then also on that, another bad decision, well, another decision I didn't agree with, was why are we scheduling Damian Maia against Masvidal if you know that GSP isn't going to get the winner of the welterweight fight on the weekend? We're 4 days away, or whenever they announced it, from the welterweight title fight. So if you know GSP is not going to fight the winner of that, why isn't Maia that guy? Like, are we trying to hold up divisions right now? Like, are they trying to give themselves reasons to make these interim belts? Like, yeah. So, but again, I'm a fan. I'm not a marketing expert. I don't know. So maybe I'm wrong and just on my soapbox here for no reason. But yeah, that's just that's how I felt. I thought they could have left the shine on 209 and save this news for say Tuesday or whatever to say to cover up a lackluster main event. All of a sudden, you want to get that news swept under the rug? Cool. GSP's fighting Bisping on Monday. Instead, no, we already know that, and we're going to talk about all the negative stuff that people like to talk about. But
yeah, and I don't think that Damian Maia fight is actually going to happen. James, that's not going to happen, is it? I think that Damian pulled out, didn't agree to it.
Oh, that's the first I've heard of it. If that's the case, I mean, I think it's well-deserving. This guy did more than deserves the title shot. I know they moved the fight. I believe it was initially going to be on that was it the Nashville card, and then they moved it to Dallas, I think. I don't know. It's so tough to keep track these days. I just saw today there's a fight, and one of the Brazil fights just got canceled, so it's pretty crazy some of the stuff that's been happening.
Okay, listen, I'm going to get you guys out of here. Josh, I'm going to let you go first. Josh, of course, is of Junkie Nation, hashtag Junkie Nation. He can be followed on Twitter at 44GSP44. Josh, you did a great job today. Thank you very much for your time.
Oh, Proteus, thanks for having me. I know with my schedule, those the late night shows during the week don't work, but if you want to have me on a Sunday afternoon with a little bit of notice, I can make it happen. I had a great time here. And to be honest, James, that's a lot of fun. James is the first person that I was a friend on Twitter with that I actually met in real life at UFC 186 in Montreal. He was too nice. He was sitting with a bunch of the media guys. Pulled a couple tables and chairs up so my wife and I could sit down with them. And yeah, ever since 186, meeting James, I met a whole bunch of cool people, media, local media, so extra cool that around Toronto and in the area. But yeah, met cool people through James, and had a pleasure sharing the podcast with him today. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, you're more than welcome. And listen, for all you junkies, Josh is going to be out at the Junkie Gathering this year in May. So look him up. Make sure you guys hook up. Buy him a beer. He likes beer. Okay, Josh, thanks very much. Have a good day.
Thanks again, guys.
Cheers. Bye-bye. All right, James, we are coming down the home stretch, and I wanted to give you this opportunity.
we have on this podcast, not only just with Josh there, but we have on this podcast, my podcast, Proteus's Primetime Show. Thank you, you know, millions of times for not only your time, but everything you do. And I wanted to give you some time to push your YouTube channel, because a lot of the videos that you're coming out with right now, again, you're the hardest working guy in MMA, as far as I know, and interviewing not only the top people in MMA, but also the people that are coming up in all ranks. So please go ahead and give yourself some shine.
Well, first off, thank you so much for the kind words. It's honestly my pleasure to come on here. I love talking with guys that, you know the sport and, you know, really want to talk about the hard-hitting topics. So I appreciate that. And just quickly, I'm glad Josh brought up that story. I was going to bring that up myself, actually. I've known Josh, like I said, since I've known him forever, actually, because he followed my podcast. He's one of the first supporters of my podcast, The Parting Shot. So he's been there since day one. And then, yeah, we got to meet at UFC 186, and we got to meet up again at the media meetup, you know, that we had for 206. So Josh is a great guy. I can't say enough good things about him. So that was a really cool getting to do the show with him today. But as far as my, you know, my show and everything else, you can always check out my work on MMAoddsbreaker.com. You can check it out on flowcombat.com and sportsnet.ca. But my YouTube channel, youtube.com/lynchonsports. I'm always interviewing, you know, UFC fighters, Bellator fighters, up and comers too, you know, Canadian fighters as well. So just be on the lookout for that. If you follow me on Twitter @lynchonsports, you can see all the updates there. For this particular card we got coming up here on Sunday, I got a whole bunch of interviews. Kevin Lee, Jeremy Kennedy, Joe Soto, Marion Renault, Max Griffin, who's now off the card, unfortunately. I had him as well. So, you know, just a lot of cool interviews. So just be on the lookout for those this week. I'll be promoting them, you know, leading up to the fights. And thanks again for having me on, Proteus. Anytime you want me on, I'm totally game. And yeah, thank you so much for the time.
Oh, you're more than welcome. Thank you for your time. And I just wanted to note that I have really, really enjoyed the fighters choosing, picking fights. It's really interesting not only to see what other fighters pick, but also the camera angles in which they choose to conduct their interviews.
Yeah, and like, I mean, people's cars and everything else. Yeah. Those get a lot of really big hits. You know, some of my biggest video views are from those pros picks video. I think the one I did from Conor McGregor and Eddie Alvarez did almost 400,000, more than 400,000 views. So it's people like it, and it's funny to see. Yeah, like I said, all the fighters going in their cars or they're at the gym or something. It's all on Skype, so they just do it remotely.
Absolutely, very fun. And James, thank you very much again for your time. And again, as James mentioned, he can be followed on Twitter @LynchOnSports. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon and enjoy the planes taking off and landing in front of your home. Thank you very much, James.
Thank you, sir. Have a good day.
You're welcome. Have a great day. Bye-bye. All right, guys. Well, that was a fun one. I enjoyed that. That was really, really fun. Two of my favorite people that I've ever gotten to meet in MMA. Really, really cool dudes. And if you get a chance to meet either one of them, like I said, junkies, if you're at the junkie gathering, go and meet Josh. You know, go up to him. He's a little shy sometimes. Maybe just go up to him and say hello. And of course, James is great. We're going to be doing, I'm going to be with James at UFC 210. Well, I'm not going to be with him. But, I mean, I'm going to UFC 210, and James is going to be at UFC 210. And I'm going to work on some new things for you, the listening audience. I'm going to try and do a little bit more video stuff. I pull back the curtain a little bit. We have applied for credentials. Amp Radio going to be looking spiffy in our Amp Radio gear. Thank you, DJ Tony. And I'm going to try and do some video content for you guys. I know the video content is where it's at. And, you know, got to step up our game. So keep an eye on that for the Amp Radio YouTube channel. Also, I'll probably try and post it on my own personal channel. Of course, Proteus, @Proteus. You know how it works. What do we have coming up in the future? Well, on Wednesday, we will have Marco, of course, from Waco, Texas, brother. And the lovely and talented Pam from North Carolina. Hopefully DJ Tony will be able to come back, be back on the show with us and do this show professionally. Unfortunately, you have been having to deal with me. in my boots and my A's. I don't think I said any A's. So that's good. That's a good thing. Also, the MMA Minute comes out. We try to do it every day in prime time. I'd like to say thank you very much for my guests, my co-host today, Josh from Tiltenberg, hashtag Junkie Nation, at 44GSP44. Follow him on Twitter. And, of course, the one and only, the incomparable James Lynch. And I forgot to ask him how his collarbone was doing, but he seems to have the brace off. Maybe we'll get some more information on that in the future. Okay, guys, so I'm going to sign out here. I have to conduct the rest of my day, go do my real job, unfortunately. So I wanted to thank you all very much for listening. I wanted to say what's up to Ryan Moody and, of course, Vegas Ford, who are usually on this show with us, but we had to move some things around, and James needed to move some things around, so we were lucky enough to get him today on the show. Thank you all very, very much for listening. You know that we appreciate you, and of course, keep it tuned, keep it locked to the AMP Radio Twitter feed. We, of course, are broadcasting live on the Blog Talk Radio. And like that.
Hey, I'm not surprised, motherfuckers.